uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Lessons from the media. Ted Turner. This is fascinating. Ted Turner has come out and said that international news and the environment should be the focus of news rather than the pervert of the day. I think, you know, a broad reference to Michael Jackson, but it could be any one of a number of stories, the runaway bride or whatever. His point, we should go back to information rather than infotainment. This was his first comment as the 24-hour news network turned 25 years old on Wednesday. He said, I'd like to see us return to a little more international coverage on the domestic feed and a little more environmental coverage and maybe a little less of the pervert of the day. He won applause and laughter from CNN employees. But CNN correspondent Christiane Amanpour said, but everyone else is doing that. Why do you think it's important not to? Turner replied, somebody's got to be a serious news person. Somebody's got to be the most respected name in television news, and I want that position for CNN. He says, I want to be the New York Times, the airwaves, not the New York Post, which is owned by Rupert Murdoch, but the New York Times. And that's what we set out to do, and we did it. And now it's, you know, did they do it? Is it still there? I don't know. I watch CNN, and there's an awful lot of infotainment on CNN. But it gets even worse. Fox News now admits that the news hounds have had it pegged right all along. Did you know, this is from Slate Magazine, did you know that Fox News is a private channel? That's what Fox's London bureau chief, Scott Norvell, said in an op-ed published in the Wall Street Journal Europe on May 20th, 2005. He also wrote this, quote, even we at Fox News manage to get some lefties on the air occasionally and often let them finish their sentences before we club them to death and feed the scraps to Karl Rove and Bill O'Reilly. This from a Fox News London correspondent. Can you believe this? Fox thinks it's a private channel? Yeah, right. Maybe they should talk to the citizens of the various countries they're in about the use of public airwaves, for example, and immediately they should drop Fair and Balanced. In fact, their new slogan should be, note Slate, watch Fox, we propagandize for the radical right. And it is so unfortunately true. In a stampede to condemn Newsweek's May 9th report about abuse of the Quran at Guantanamo, this media advisory from... Actually, I don't have the source of it here. I'm sorry. I believe it's from Media Matters. A media source notes that little attention has been paid to the technique of the magazine used in reporting its original story. Well, here's actually what happened. Newsweek, when they first started defending themselves on the Quran story, they came out and they said, we did run this story past the U.S. military. And I remember reading that and going, what? And it's like nobody is asking the question. Newsweek is running their stories by the military before they run them. Now, there's a big difference. I mean, it's entirely appropriate. Many people would argue this. I absolutely agree that it's entirely appropriate to run your facts past a source. This is called fact-checking. Time Magazine did an article about me in a book that I'd written a couple of years ago, and I get a call from their fact checker. I was in Vanity Fair a few years back. Their fact checker calls me up. I've been in the New York Times a couple of times, been on the Wall Street Journal, the front page of the Wall Street Journal, in fact, twice. Every single time, the publication would call me up, and they'd say, did you really say this? Did you really do this? Is this true? None of them ever, ever let me read the article before they published it. It just never happened. So what is Newsweek doing running an article, giving the entire article, not calling up the military and saying, was it Quran abuse, but rather saying, how'd you like to read this article? What do you think about this? And the military offering editorial suggestions. What, have we become the Soviet Union? Does Newsweek think its job is the same as Pravda's? I find this mind-boggling. I mean, here's Richard M. Smith. He's Newsweek's editor-in-chief. On May 30th, he said, one of the frustrating aspects of our initial inquiry is that we seem to have taken so many appropriate steps in reporting the Guantanamo story. We sought comment from one military spokesman. He declined and provided the entire story. Now get that. This is a really important thing. Newsweek provided the entire story to a senior Defense Department official who disputed one assertion which we changed and said nothing about the charge of abusing the Quran. So he's trying to say this in, like, defense of what he's doing. Oh, you know, we were pretty sure that story was right because we gave the whole story to the military. The whole story? You gave the whole story to the military? This frankly just boggles me. And then you get Washington Post media reporter Howard Kurtz, the perennial guest, in fact, on Chris Matthews' show, and who has now also, by Media Matters, been outed as a right-winger, a rather severe right-winger, who voted for George W. Bush. Howard Kurtz, Matthews' perennial guest, says, from the Washington Post, says, Newsweek did the right thing. Say, what? Newsweek did the right thing by running a draft of the item by senior Pentagon officials. It's odd that the Pentagon didn't raise any flags. This to me just strikes me as absolutely strange. Absolutely strange. By the way, we're broadcasting, I believe I mentioned it, but I'll say it again. We're broadcasting live from the Take Back America conference in Washington, D.C. If the noise level in the background is a little stranger, a little higher than normal. And our telephone number, if you'd like to call in, be on the program, 1-866-889-8894, toll-free across the United States. If you'd like to drop into our live chat room, go to tomhartmann.com and click live chat. That will get you in there. And as well as our blog, which is off that, tomhartmann.com, the message board where you can participate. Jim in Grand Rapids, Michigan, listening on WTKG in Grand Rapids online. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Well, you're talking about Newsweek. I just wanted to point out what I consider to be a rather major error in an article that they just wrote about George Washington. I don't know if you saw it or read it or anything like that.
I think I missed that. Tell me about it.
Well, it was a pretty good article other than the fact that when they mentioned George Washington's mother's name, they had it wrong.
Okay. Well, he's kind of hard to call up and fact check, although any biography or even a quick internet search should get them that. But that's,
yes,
now, Jim, those are the kind of mistakes that I'm perfectly willing to cede to the press. So they got George Washington's mother's name wrong. That's not a big deal. But taking an entire story and giving it to the United States government and saying, do you approve of this story before we publish it, when you're Newsweek, says to me that we've lost freedom of the we've lost an independent media in the United States. They're no longer here. They're gone. They're toast. They've left. They've left the building.
Yeah, well, they became toast with me when they couldn't even get the father of the country's mother's name right. Perhaps if they had, they would have a better reporting staff and they would have got the next story correct.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, I'll give
but
you
it's
that, Jim.
Not like it's, yeah, it's not like it's an unknown thing.
Yeah. I'll
and
give
it's
you
not like it's all that difficult to check.
Yeah, I'll give you that, but I have to say, I think that there's, and I appreciate the call. Thanks a lot, Jim, for calling from Grand Rapids. But I think the bigger issue here, yes, if you look in any major newspaper, you're going to find a little page, a little line that says, media corrections, and all that sort of thing. Is Kim here? Yeah, great. You're going to find, media corrections, and, there's three or four paragraphs, and they say, here's our correction on this, here's our correction on that, and all that kind of stuff. And, that's life. I mean, I was a reporter for the better part of 7 years. You make mistakes as a reporter. But there's a huge difference between making a mistake as a reporter and going to the government. In this case, Newsweek going to the Pentagon and saying, we would like to run this entire story by you, word for word, and let you comment on it. I have a real problem with that. I just have to say I do. One of the great things about being here at the Take Back America conference is that there's really great people walking through here. Kim Gandy, the president of NOW, the National Organization for Women, who is presenting here. Kim, when and where are you presenting?
I'm doing the Walmart workshop tomorrow at 11:45 and then speaking at the closing lunch with Jesse Jackson at 1:15.
Oh, that's the Walmart one sounds fascinating. And this Walmart in the context of women's issues.
Yes, exactly. NOW declared Walmart a merchant of shame in 2002. And we've run a campaign for the last 3 years to make sure that women, who are the primary consumers in most families, know really what Walmart stands for and what's behind that smiley face.
And what does Walmart stand for and what's behind that smiley face?
I think that it's, well, number one, it's the most sued company in America.
Most sued?
The most sued company in the
United This must be why the Bush administration is so gung-ho about lawsuit reform.
Yes, exactly.
Stop those people from suing, right?
Exactly.
And what are they usually sued for?
It's race and sex discrimination is one of the primary... there are primary target of race and sex discrimination lawsuits. There's a class action pending now with 1.6 million plaintiffs against Walmart for race and sex discrimination. I mean, this is a country with a company with a brain but no heart and no conscience.
Yeah. The definition of that in psychology books is sociopath.
Well, exactly. Exactly. And there actually is literature that Walmart prepares for their employees to tell them how to get public assistance. That's one of the ways that Walmart keeps their prices so low, is that they pay their employees so little that a really significant part of Walmart's employees are on food stamps and are on public assistance of one kind or another with the help of the company. They actually help their employees get on the public dole so that they can keep their prices low and keep their profits up. But
yeah,
it comes at our expense.
Now, I want to correct you, if I may, respectfully. Costco, for example, competes with Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
And they have very often even lower prices than Walmart. Costco pays their employees well.
Yes, they
do. The difference between the two is that Costco doesn't pay their stockholders as much.
Oh, I said, and their profits high.
Right. So
they keep their prices low and their profits high taking it out of the hide of their employees.
That's right. My big concern is that we progressives are doing Walmart's advertising for them. They're sitting back there going, every time one of us says they keep their prices low at the expense of their employees. Now, the vast majority of Americans are not Walmart employees. I mean, there's over a million of them, but that's not the vast, you know, there's 300 million Americans, more or less. And so when Americans hear that, they go, oh, well, you know, most Americans, well, you know, they'll figure out some way to rationalize it. I mean, we rationalized slavery for 200 years. We can certainly rationalize shopping at Walmart. And they'll say, well, you know, they must have the lowest prices because they screw their employees. And so, you know, if I want to get the cheapest, barbecue or tennis shoes or whatever, I'll go there. But the reality is that what Walmart has is the highest corporate profits.
Yes.
The Walton family is worth over $100 billion. They are spearheading the effort to roll back the inheritance tax and to undo that. And so I've just taken that out of my vocabulary. I no longer say Walmart has low prices because they're screwing their employees or harming their employees or whatever word you want to use, because really that's not why they have the lowest prices. And they don't have, first of all, they don't have the lowest prices. And secondly, that's not why they're doing this to their employees. They're doing this to their employees so they can have higher stockholder benefits.
That's exactly right. But also, I think it is important that people understand where some of this is coming from. People have said repeatedly that within reason, they'll pay an extra penny for a can of peas if
yeah.
it means that the people working at that store get decent wages
yeah.
and benefits.
Or what if the stockholders got one penny less?
Exactly.
We'll be back with Kim Gandy with NOW, the National Organization for Women, right after this, 20 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Say what? Welcome back, my friends. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from California to North Carolina, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, whiterosesociety.org, Live 365's American FM. And on cable TV systems in 29 states, on CRN Digital, crndigital.com. Welcome back, our friends. My friends, Kim Gandy is with us. Kim, we were talking about your campaign, the National Organization for Women, of which you're the president, about the campaign around Walmart. It's been a long day. And what you're doing with that. And you were just making a point about Walmart's profits.
Oh, it's ridiculous. When you look at what the level of their profits, it's over $8 billion a year. A tiny fraction of that $8 billion could result in fair and appropriate treatment for every Walmart employee. Every Walmart employee could have normal benefits and a living wage for less than $1 billion of that $8 billion worth of profits every year. It really is corporate greed that's behind their treatment of their employees.
But the Walton heirs, I mean, they just... George Bush gave them a tax cut, the last tax cut, not just a tax cut for, you know, folks who earn high salaries, but he said if you make your living sitting on your butt around the pool waiting for the dividend check to arrive, mm-hmm. as, you know, all four of the Walton heirs do, none of them have ever worked a day in their lives, then you only have to pay a 15% maximum income tax rate on dividend income.
That's right.
And I'm just amazed that part of the tax cut didn't get any publicity. I mean, I think I'm the only person talking about it.
Exactly.
And the Walton heirs are, you know, they've got their tax cut and they want their extra billion. And, you know, it's like, you know, employees, they could take a leap. And in fact, they've done the same thing, you know, exporting our jobs to China.
Exactly. You know, corporate greed, really, its name is Walmart, and it's a race to the bottom. There are a lot of companies trying to emulate them. Yeah. And the grocery worker strike in California came because a lot of the grocery stores out there, afraid that Walmart was invading their territory, immediately starting cutting benefits, cutting salaries, as a preemptive strike to try to compete.
Before Walmart moved into the market.
And the race to the bottom.
Yeah.
Of course, and that's what Walmart does. They cut their prices until they drive mom-and-pop stores out of business, and then they raise them again.
Right. And to bring this back around to the Bush administration and the whole con agenda, what we have to point out, and I think it has to be pointed out over and over and over again, is that this isn't that Walmart is a bad corporation or a rogue corporation or that they're bad people. They're playing by the rules. They have participated in corrupting the rules. But they're playing by the rules. And if we want to change their behavior, because we've always had greedy corporations, we've got to change the rules. We've got to do what they did to the robber barons in 1890 when they said, hey, you can't have trusts. And Ronald, you know, the Sherman Antitrust Act passed in December of 1890, and Ronald Reagan stopped enforcing it in 1980, interesting juxtaposition there, leading to this mergers and acquisition mania and leading to the end of the Made in America campaign that was the hallmark of Walmart when Sam Walton was around.
Exactly.
And so, you know,
in fact, most people believe that if Sam Walton were still around, it would be a very different company.
Yeah, I suspect that that's probably true because he very was into that Made in America thing. And when he died, those signs went down and they started moving to China just, you know, as fast as a greased bug. I mean, it was.
He was also very supportive of employees. A lot of the really loyal Walmart employees are the ones who remember the old days and who remember Sam Walton, who did treat employees well, and made great profits. They made great profits, but they didn't make them on the backs of their employees, and they still kept prices low.
Yeah.
It's not necessary.
We have about a minute and a half, Kim. What are the other issues that now the National Organization for Women is working on right now?
Of course, we're working on the issue of judges. The Supreme Court resignation is really expected any day in the next few weeks. Hopefully, as soon as there is a resignation, everyone listening will go to www.now.org to find out what they can do on a Supreme Court nominee.
Uh-huh.
And we're also working to stop the effort to privatize Social Security. I think we're doing really well at that. The president's ratings are very low.
Because privatized Social Security is going to disproportionately hit women.
Terrible, terrible for women. Women earn less over their lifetimes because of pay inequity and because of time out of the workforce. And so we're disproportionately dependent on Social Security, not just on the retirement benefits, but on the disability and survivors benefits. It's very critical to women.
www.now.org. Kim Gandy, the national president. Thank you so much for being with us, Kim.
My pleasure.
I do appreciate it. 29 minutes past the hour on the Tom Hartman program.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Just because he said that there was weapons.
Oh, there were weapons. Look out.
Hidden under pigsties over there.
Yeah, that's where they were.
Just because my boy may never make it home again. Don't mean he don't care.
He's a compassionate conservative.
And if you ask me why I still believe him.
You do?
After being lied. few more chances. Learning on the job still ain't no crime.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast from the Take Back America Conference put on by the folks at OurFuture.org. And our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894, toll-free nationwide. If you're outside the United States, 503-248-0620. If you'd like to drop into our live chat room, go to tomhartman.com and click live chat. Bill in Cleveland, Ohio on the line. Hey, Bill, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. How are you today?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's up,
yeah,
Bill?
Yeah, we all will. Hey, I think that conference is great. I'm really excited about some of the things that might come out of it. But can I plug something about election reform that's going to happen tomorrow with Bev Harris?
Sure, go for it.
Okay, it's an election reform gathering in Cleveland here from 6 to 9 at Antioch Baptist Church. It's being put on by, I'm really trying to make this quick, by Ohio Vigilance. And anybody that wants to attend, I mean, we'd love to have a big turnout, ohiovigilance.org, and Stephanie Tubbs Jones will speak, Bev Harris will speak, Bob Fitrakis will speak, and then on Saturday there will be workshops, and I'm really excited about this because I'm the guy that called and talked to Bernie Sanders a couple of weeks ago about election reform, and now we've got something going here.
That's great. Good on you, Bill.
I thank you so much for everything you do, Tom, and thanks for letting me say that.
Well, I think you're welcome, Bill. And normally, you know, we wouldn't say, you know, if it was somebody in Biloxi saying, hey, I'd like to plug the you know, we're having a poker game tonight or something like that, I'd say no. But this is really one of the most important issues that we're facing in America right now is the integrity of our vote and the theft of our vote. And now that John Conyers has published his findings, where 11 members of the United States House of Representatives from the House Judiciary Committee went to Ohio and held a public hearings and took under oath testimony for several weeks and concluded that several hundred thousand votes were clearly illegally, to use John Conyers' language, illegally stolen, taken, and swung. And in many cases, I mean, he documented voting machines. They actually nailed down the particular machines that swung votes from John Kerry to George Bush. This in an election where 60,000 additional people voting for John Kerry, or 60,000 people who had voted for John Kerry instead of George Bush, would mean that John Kerry would be president right now. So the theft of the vote in Ohio is a big deal. And so I encourage people in the Ohio area to check that out and participate with it. Scott in San Diego on the line. Hey, Scott, what's up?
Well, good morning, Tom. I heard you guys talking about Walmart, which I've been calling China Mart for a while.
Yes, you call it Communist China Mart.
Well, that's, you know, and I can understand the way.
And let us not forget, there's two Chinas.
Sure.
Go ahead, Scott.
What is a lot of people don't realize with China is I work with corporations in the high-tech field, and when China negotiates, they are the most difficult negotiator out there because they want part of your IP. They want to start making whatever it is you're selling, and they usually cap that agreement with a certain amount of time. They're going to have almost all your IP.
Yeah.
And they negotiate really, really hard, Tom. And people in this country, they think we had a hard time with Japan in the 80s.
Yeah.
They've got no idea what dealing with China is going to be like. They're going to own this country. And, Tom, I'm frightened about that.
Yeah, I think many of us are. And it's not that they're going to own this country, Scott. Right now, they are taking so much of our debt. George Bush is borrowing so many hundreds of billions, $2 billion a day we're having to borrow just to keep the government afloat. And we're borrowing much of that from China. And they now hold so much of our debt that if they decided to start selling it on the open market or simply stop buying it, they could throw us into a depression that would make 1929 look like a picnic. And they know that, and they have already threatened us that, you know, with that around Taiwan. This is a really serious issue. And it's something, again, it's not that Walmart is bad for buying stuff from China. It's that our legislators are nuts for having done away with tariffs and signed these absurd and obscene trade policies, trade deals, that have made all this possible.
How much of our country is now owned by China, Tom? I'm looking for a figure, and I've heard 51%, but I can't find it anymore.
No, it's nothing close to 51%. But, you know, frankly, I don't know, Scott. But I have, you can find occasionally on a county-by-county basis foreign ownership of local businesses. One day, a month or so ago on this program, I read it just for Allegheny County, Pennsylvania, and there was like 422 companies in that county that were foreign-owned, and we just went through it. And it turned out to be maybe 5% of all of the companies. It's not that huge yet, but it still represents mind-boggling numbers of jobs. Scott, thanks a lot for the call. Great
Thank
to hear
you.
From you. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. Alice in Humboldt County, California. Hey, Alice.
Oh, it sounds like that whole Newsweek story was a plant. It was them creating news to take attention away from something else that they didn't want in the news.
Well, Alice, in your 91 years, have you ever seen the government try to manipulate the news the way that they are now?
No.
This is really a new and different time that we've entered into.
I'm worried about China, too.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm very worried.
Me, too. Yeah. Alice, thank you for the call. I always appreciate hearing from you, and you always have a pithy comment to share with us. It's great to hear from you. Thank you. Thanks for listening to us there on KGOE in Eureka, California. I have with me Craig Pridemore. He's a state senator in the state of Washington and participating here in the conference.
Yeah, having a great time.
What brought you out here? I mean, an airplane, obviously.
Yeah. It's a long way from Washington State, but yeah. I really was looking forward to the opportunity to meet with and talk with people who have fresh ideas and have a direction for this country and for our communities that I share, and really to get some fresh ideas, and that's working out tremendously.
What part of the state of Washington do you represent?
I'm actually from the city of Vancouver, which is right across the Columbia River from Portland.
I'm on the air in Vancouver for three hours, yeah, before in Vancouver and Portland, yeah, before this program. Mm-hmm. So I know that we have actually one of the folks in our chat room is in Washington State right now. So we certainly are. There are listeners there. What do you define yourself? You're a Democrat, I'm assuming.
I am a Democrat.
Do you define yourself as a progressive Democrat?
Or? I sometimes use the word liberal.
Goodness!
Certainly, yeah.
You're a brave man.
Certainly, hold to the progressive values and certainly ran on that basis for the Senate this year. I'm a first term.
How did you do that and win?
Well, I was running. It always helps to be in a progressive district, and the 49th Legislative District, which is what I represent, is a progressive district. It did have a moderate Republican who was serving there for the past 4 years in the Senate and years before that in the House of Representatives. So I ran against him and was fortunate enough to have the citizen support.
I think, tell me if I'm wrong here, you're on the ground. I mean, you have the feedback from the citizens on an ongoing basis, and it seems to me that whether an area is red state or blue state, whether they consider themselves liberal, progressive, conservative, no matter what, if you simply talk about the issues and not the labels, this is what Bernie Sanders has done so brilliantly. I mean, he's an independent. He's been reelected 7 times now in Vermont. I used to live in Vermont, and I'll tell you, most of Vermont is rural. They drive pickup trucks. They got gun racks in the back. They're very, very quote conservative, and yet he 4 to 5 margins wipes out Republicans, not to mention Democrats, in those districts, because he talks about the issues. He talks about the workers' rights. He talks about our jobs leaving this country. He talks about health care for all and health care as part of the commons, as a right for people. He talks about the environment. And he talks about the environment in a context that makes sense to people who want to go out and look at beautiful mountains and people who want to go hunting. He talks about all of these things. I mean, why haven't other progressives in the United States, other liberals, other progressive Democrats, why haven't they adopted this? Why is the Democratic Party as a whole still so wed to the extent that it is, the Democratic Leadership Council and corporate money and calling themselves what, right-wingers on TV, what Fox News calls moderates? Why are there still conservative Democrats out there? I don't get it.
Well, there's some conservative Democrats who simply have conservative values, or values that are labeled as conservative.
For example, what does that mean?
There are pro-life Democrats. There are Democrats who don't share our values of equal protections and rights for gays and lesbians. There are Democrats who don't hold to those values. However, I think you hit on the right strategy. for Democrats and for progressives in this country, and that is to focus on the issues. Because when we talk about the issues, the vast majority of people do share our values, and we do represent those values. One of the most difficult things out there is what the media does and how they interpret campaigns.
Right.
They keep running on the horse race, and if you don't have that money, whether it's corporate money or what have you, if you don't have that money, they don't give you the credibility when you talk about issues.
They boil it down to sound bites.
So that's what makes it very difficult, I think, for any Democrat in the current system. But if they can get their message out there, they can connect with voters on those issues, they're going to do very well in the vast majority of districts in this country.
We're talking with Craig Pridmore, who's with us. He's a state senator from the state of Washington. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Jay in Chicago is on the line. Hey, Jay, what's up?
Hey, you know how the Amnesty International report recommends to other countries that they basically say that Bush and his people are all war criminals?
Well, Amnesty International never said that Bush and his friends were war criminals. You could infer that from what they said.
But did it affect that they should take him into custody or something if they went to that country?
Not in their official report, no. I don't believe so. I could be wrong, but my understanding is that an official with Amnesty International suggested that. But I'm sure if I'm wrong, one of our listeners or somebody in the chat room will correct me.
So what if...
Let's say, for example, that they did. What's your question,
yeah,
or point, Jay?
My question is, what would happen if other countries and majority of the United Nations actually took that advice?
Yeah, well, what would happen? We would find ourselves very isolated very quickly. I mean, there's a lot of countries right now that Henry Kissinger can't travel to because he's considered an international war criminal. And this is one of the reasons, in fact, probably the main reason that George Bush tried to pull us out of the International Criminal Court was that, on behalf of Henry Kissinger, and perhaps he was prescient, perhaps he saw this coming down the road. I don't know. Is that sort of thing an issue in Washington State, Craig? Do you get any sense of that?
Well, we certainly have some citizens who are extremely concerned about that. I think what most citizens out there are most concerned with are the basic issues of health care and how are we going to compete internationally in a system that's really not fair for the United States. Those kinds of issues, the broader issues, I think, are affecting people who are really in touch and really engaged in the issues. But for the average voter out there, it's not something that they're paying enough attention to.
Yeah, for sure. 1-866-889-8894. Doug in Newport, Pennsylvania is on the line. Hey, Doug.
Hi, how you doing?
Great. What's up?
Well, the comment that he made just a minute ago about there are some conservative Democrats out there who are, pro-life or, about gay rights and stuff like that. Those seem to me not to be conservative issues as much as religious issues. And I just wonder, when did conservatism become... totally around religion. I mean, conservatism to me means smaller government, government staying out of people's lives, things like that. But anymore, whenever someone says it's conservative, it's got to mean a Christian,
Well, and not even broadly Christian. I mean, I identify myself as a Christian, and I don't agree with those positions. I think that, we're talking about a cult within Christianity, a small sect of Christians. But your point well taken, Doug. And Craig, your thoughts. I think Doug's absolutely right saying that if a woman wants to have an abortion and it's lawful, and it's a decision that she and her doctor have made together and her family, or however it's made, that then the government should have the right to come in. I actually had, when I was at the RNC, I had an anti-abortion guy, major Republican, come in. He sat down. I said, my first question, he thought I was a conservative talk show host, right? Because I was on this radio row with all these conservatives. My first question to him was, when we get enough Republicans in that we can stack the Supreme Court and roll back Roe v. Wade, and it's illegal for women to get an abortion, should a woman who has an abortion be put to death by hanging or by lethal injection? And his answer, with a totally straight face, was, it's up to the state to choose the method of execution. This is not a, this, Barry Goldwater was a pro-life guy. Barry Goldwater said, this is not for the state to decide. Barry Goldwater was opposed to most drug laws. I mean, this is not really conservative, is it?
I think what we're getting to here is the real issue that these labels are not sufficient and are really inappropriate, and that's why when we talk about conservative Democrats, maybe that's the wrong phrase to use. Certainly when we start talking about conservative and liberal, the social issues jump immediately to mind.
Yeah, but when it comes to gay rights, it's bigotry, and when it comes to abortion, it's religion. isn't that what it boils down to?
Well, I'll let you boil it down.
You've got religious bigot Democrats, and you've got non-religious bigot Democrats.
The reality is a Democrat.
I know you don't want to call your peers that because
that's the struggle we're in. But the reality is the Democratic Party is a broad tent party, and there are people with different views and different specific issues. I think some of us tend to be more in the progressive of the progressive category.
Sure.
But we have differences of opinions on a variety of issues.
But isn't there a point at which, and I'm not asking you to make policy for the Democratic Party, and I realize that you know, as an elected official and as a Democrat, there are probably limits to what you can say and might be quoted on in a national program. But nonetheless, aren't there limits to how broad the tent should be for any party? I mean, the Republicans ran away from David Duke, even though he was trying as hard as he could to embrace them. At what point, what's it going to take for the Democrats to say, hey, wait a minute, this is really what we're about. We're about personal freedom. We're about separation of church and state, things like that. Craig, we've got to take a break right now. I'm sorry, the clock got away from me, but we'll come back with your answer to that right after this. If you can stick around.
Absolutely.
Okay, great. We're talking with Craig Pridemore, a state senator from the state of Washington. Tom Hartman broadcasting live from the Take Back America Conference, put on by the folks from OurFuture.org. And our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. Tom Hartman, the website, 10 minutes before the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Yes, the pendulum is swinging back in favor of rationality in the United States. Nothing to worry about. Good times are coming. I believe it. I believe it. You do too, don't you, Craig?
Absolutely.
Craig Pridemore, Washington State Senator. Marvin in Fort Worth, Texas on the line. And Craig is going to answer my question here in just a second. I'll give Marvin a chance to toss out a quick question. Maybe we can give Craig a twofer here.
Well, we're talking about the religious right and you mentioned you being a Christian. Get off my chest. I actually share many of the religious views of the religious right. I just don't think I need to force them on everybody else. I think it's counterproductive. It's like we don't care about your soul. We don't care about changing your heart and mind. We just want to force you to live our way.
Yeah, good point, Marvin. Good point and well said.
I think you know, people that aren't Christian already are saying, I want nothing to do with this. I think it's counterproductive.
Yeah, absolutely, and an excellent point. And in fact, when James Madison in 1812 vetoed the first piece of legislation to come out of Congress that would give money to the poor through a church, the first attempt to give money to a church from the federal government, James Madison vetoed it, and he said that the reason why there should be a wall between church and state and there never should be federal money given to churches was not because he was worried about churches taking over the government. He was worried about the government corrupting churches. And now we have George W. Bush last year gave $1 billion, a large chunk of it to black churches around America, where the black vote in those churches for George W. Bush doubled in that election cycle. Anyhow, you were saying, I'd ask you, at what point does a political party say, these guys are too toxic for us?
Well, and that's the deal, and where we've got to be very careful with these, you know, broad umbrellas. And I'll give you an example. In the Washington State Senate today, we have a senator who will remain nameless, who is very conservative on social issues. He's pro-life. He's not in favor of equal rights or protections for gays and lesbians. However, he is a strong believer in the government being involved in social service programs and assisting most vulnerable citizens in our communities. He is an outstanding Democrat in those senses. Now, do I want to tell him that he doesn't have a place in the Democratic Party when he agrees with me on so many of those other issues? Very difficult thing to do, and difficult for any political party.
Yeah, and especially if you go after him and he gets replaced by a Republican who's actually really seriously toxic.
Yeah,
this guy's only marginally toxic.
And I don't know if I'd want us to go down that road of justification, but being on those issues is really good.
I agree. Thanks so much for being with us. Craig Pridemore, Washington State Senator. Tom Hartman here with you at the Take Back America Conference, put on by the folks from OurFuture.org. The Tom Hartman radio program, the radio support group of, by, and for we the people. It's 58 minutes past the hour.
You You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from California to West Virginia, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet on RadioPower.org, WhiteRoseSociety.org, Live 365's American FM, and on digital, on cable systems in 29 states on CRN Digital. Welcome back to our program. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. If you'd like to drop into our live chat room, which is at the moment well populated by folks on at least two continents, as I can see, go to TomHartman.com and click live chat. Pat in Menominee, Wisconsin is on the line. I'm assuming following up from our conversations in the last hour. Hey, Pat, what's up?
Not a lot. Good afternoon, Tom. On the subject of the religious right, I know that you know of Reverend Barry Lynn.
Yes. In fact, he's here at a conference someplace, lurking about.
He's a good example of someone who is sensible on the religious issue, the separation of church and state. Have you ever had him on your show?
I have. Yeah, he's been on this
and
program
I
before.
Miss,
and I've been
I
on his program.
That.
Barry's a good
very
guy.
Very good.
Yeah.
Yes, perhaps people would like to know more of him that more about him that don't know, and I thought that I would mention his name.
Yeah.
And just wanted to do that and wish everyone a good day.
Well done, Pat. Thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894, a telephone number. And we have, I think I mentioned, did I mention, Pat, that I'm or Nancy, rather, that I'm broadcasting live from the conference?
Yes.
Yeah.
You did.
Forget what I said here. It's
from coast to coast.
Yes, indeed. And we're here at the Take Back America conference. And one of the cool things about being here is that Nancy Keenan of NARAL, I'm mispronouncing it.
NARAL Pro-Choice America.
NARAL Pro-Choice America. Have you been on our program before?
I have not. I just started with as president in December.
Oh, so, okay. Because I was going to say, I know we've had folks from NARAL on before. So,
right.
Glad to have you here. This is just one of the great things about being at a conference like this is so many great people are here that we can just grab and say, here, sit down in front of this microphone. We got to talk. You have something to say, and it's important, and our listeners need to know what it is. A faux ad, or did you actually run this ad?
No, we are kicking off that campaign today to actually run a Supreme Court justice ad seeking a right-wing yes man for high visibility, etc.
This is running in the classified ad sections of newspapers around the country?
We hope to run it across the country.
Incredible. This is in the Help Wanted section. It says Supreme Court justice seeking a right-wing yes man for high visibility, lifelong appointed position, soon to be available in Washington, D.C., must be willing to work in a team environment with eight other justices, previous experience as a judge or lawyer, a plus but not required, must be able to make unconstitutional rulings sound reasonable, narrow-mindedness and interest in turning back the clock on women's rights, a plus. Benefits include lifetime job security, potential to wipe out reproductive rights for generations, power to make decisions that will affect all Americans' lives. To apply, contact hiring manager Carl Rove. This is absolutely great. I love it, Nancy.
Yeah, and it's a whole issue around the importance of the Supreme Court battle that we'll probably see this summer and how it affects everyday people's lives, and especially when it comes to women's lives and women's reproductive choices. And, you know, we've been fighting here lately around them denying women birth control in this country, that pharmacists are doing that. So, you know, this is an important battle, and we want Americans to get engaged in it.
And now the cons are ratcheting this thing up by fighting against stem cell research, and in the attempt to fight against stem cell research, and this is all part of this whole thing that has to do with their anti-birth control position, their anti-abortion position, and their now their anti-stem cell research position, because stem cells come from embryos which are fertilized during in vitro fertilization procedures. Somebody goes in, they have in vitro fertilization, they're infertile, and usually fallopian tubes are scarred up, and so they draw the eggs out of the ovaries, I believe. It's or maybe they cause them to be. I'm not a doctor.
Yeah.
I don't know. But
yeah.
In any case, you get a bunch of eggs and you mix them with some sperm on a petri dish, and boom, you've got fertilized eggs. But only one's going to grow to be a person. You implant that in the uterus, and boom, you've got a baby. What do you do with the leftover eggs? They used to just flush them down the drain. Although clinics have worked with people in the past to implant them, you know, for
right.
couples who are infertile, to say, here, you can have some of these. But now Bush, 2 years ago, they gave $1 million grant to this conservative, religious adoption agency in Riverside, California, and they started this snowflake program,
mm-hmm.
and now they've produced some babies, and now they're talking about adopting embryos. You two can adopt an embryo. Well, this is for 27 years. As long as we've had in vitro fertilization, this has been going on, but now they're trying to give... Once you use the word adoption, you're giving a whole new category of rights.
That's right.
To a piece of tissue that's 8 cells big, or you know, 2 cells big, or you know, its original form. And where does it end?
Well, that's it. And I think this is, again, to the broader issue here. Here are people in this country, the conservative or radical right, who want to control every part of a woman's life. I mean, from the time here we have even they're lying to young kids about sex education. So we've got them... with abstinence-only sex education in our schools. You've got them now denying women birth control, not making emergency contraception available, the whole issue around stem cell and the debate around embryos. And again...
They're fighting against the papillomavirus?
That's right, which could save people's lives.
Yeah.
And I think that you have to step back and take a look at this, that if these people were really wanting to reduce the number of abortions in our country, then they would indeed join us and join many of us that are working on the issue of prevention,
yeah.
prevent unintended pregnancies. And, I mean, that's the hypocrisy here, that, you know, when we get into the battles around the courts and we talk about a woman's right to choose, a woman's right to privacy, her personal responsibility in choosing birth control, these guys are after it all. And it is it's not going to stop with just overturning Roe v. Wade. They really want to get into our personal private lives, especially around birth control.
Yeah. Back in 1873, there was a Supreme Court case. In fact, I just want to get the exact language on it. I wonder if I can easily, quickly grab it here. It's called Bradwell versus State. And whoever did the index in this book didn't do it well enough. Anyhow, back in 1873, there was Sarah Bradwell had come to the Supreme Court. It was actually she was living in Illinois in Chicago, got herself licensed or whatever you did back in 1873 as a lawyer, walked into a court for her first day as a lawyer, said, I'm here to defend so-and-so, whatever. Judge looked down from his bench, pointed out to her that she was a woman. She acknowledged that and threw her out,
mm-hmm.
told her he wouldn't allow a woman to practice in his court. And she sued, and she took that all the way to the Supreme Court, and... I've got to find this. Here we are, right here. And the Supreme Court ruled in 1873 in Bradwell versus Illinois, and I quote, Justice Bradley wrote the court's concurring opinion, quote, the family institution is repugnant to the idea of a woman adopting a distinct and independent career from that of her husband. So firmly fixed was this sentiment in the founders of the common law that it became a maxim of that system of jurisprudence that a woman has no legal existence separate from her husband, who is regarded as her head and representative in the social state. End quote. And that was essentially the law until 1973.
That's right.
1973, Roe v. Wade. People think Roe v. Wade was about abortion. It was not about abortion. It was overturning Bradwell versus State. It was about whether or not women have the same access to the Fourth Amendment and other rights under law that men do.
That's exactly right.
And why is it that nobody's talking about this?
Well, I think, you know, sometimes when we're talking in the legal terms, it's you know, it doesn't affect everybody's personal lives every day when we're talking about the courts and a particular case. I think when it does affect our lives and where we see, like Griswold, Griswold case is coming up here on 40 years.
Griswold versus Connecticut.
Griswold versus Connecticut, which said women can access birth control. And here we are 40 years later, and we have pharmacists across this country denying women. They go in with a prescription, a legal prescription. They give them a lecture. They tell them they're not going to give them their prescription. And these women leave absolutely just appalled that in this day and age, we are still fighting for our right to make those very personal, responsible decisions about our reproduction. And not only that,
I believe it was the Texas sodomy case, both Scalia and Thomas quoted one of the justices, and I want to say it was Bradley, but I just read Bradley, so Cunningham is another name. In any case, they quoted one of the justices in that case, in that 1964 case, where at that point, prior to that case, it was illegal for a married couple have birth control in their own bedroom.
That's right. Right. And we are like turning the clock back.
Scalia and Thomas are quoting those guys saying, this is how it should be. This in the Texas sodomy case. And people in America don't get it, that it's not about being conservative or liberal. It's not even about being religious or not religious. It's about folks who want to have control over every aspect of other people's lives and use the power of government to enforce
right.
it. And I realize as I'm sitting here saying this that I'm sounding like Barry Goldwater or Everett Dirksen. I mean, this used to be the conservative position.
That's right.
Get the government out of our lives. What has happened to the conservatives?
Well, I think, you know, we're seeing it at every level that when people are acting personally responsible in accessing birth control, for example, 95% of American women at one time or other life has accessed it, that these folks want to be involved in that decision. They want to be involved in whether or not your kids are taught appropriate sex education, whether or not the information and the truth is being told to them. They want politicians involved in every part of our life. And I think most Americans find that obnoxious. It's like...
Oh, it's worse than obnoxious. I mean, this is a life and death issue.
It is.
When I was in high school, revealing my age here, I guess, but when I was in high school, abortion was illegal.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the girls in my, you know, in 10th grade died. I mean, she had an illegal abortion, and she died.
Right.
We're talking life and death here.
We are. And if Roe v. Wade is overturned, it just means that those back alley days that you and I lived during that time, a lot of our young women and men didn't experience that live today, but the fact is we will return to that. Well,
because a lot of us back in the 60s knew people who died or who were disfigured or who were permanently sterile or who bled for months and months and were hospitalized as a result of illegal abortions or attempts at self-induced abortions because it was illegal.
That's right.
And 20-somethings, 30-somethings today, even 40-somethings, early young ones anyway, they have no recollection of this.
None of that, but I think what the bigger agenda is, again, is that they want to be part of every bit of our reproductive lives. And that means, I mean, who thought that we would be a day that you go in with a legal prescription and you can't walk out with it?
Right.
And that they send you down. Women should not be inconvenienced. They should not be lectured to. And that these pharmacists have a duty to dispense. And I think for the younger generation, that is their reality, that if you think it's only about abortion, it is not. It is about all of those decisions we make as women in our lives that is at risk here and is being threatened.
Yeah. And then we have Dr. Hager, the physician that George Bush appointed to the FDA panel to determine women's health issues.
Yes.
The guy who wrote several books, you know, Jesus and Women's Health or whatever it was. And we find out that he had been raping his wife, sodomizing his wife, and leaving $2,000 on the dresser after he was finished. This guy. And he's still, and the Bush administration is still holding him up and still quoting his positions with regard to the Plan B.
That's
pill,
right.
Which is a contraceptive pill. It's not an abortifacient. The Plan B does not cause an abortion.
That's exactly
it prevents
right.
conception.
Exactly right.
I'm just boggled that the average American has no knowledge of this. Our press has done such a miserable job of informing us.
Well, and this is where a panel of scientists said it's safe, it's legal, and it should be available to women across this country, and that's the right thing
to
do.
That's the bottom line. And the website is...
It's www.prochoiceamerica.org.
Great. Thank you so much, Nancy Keenan.
Thank you.
It's 20 minutes past the hour.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Oh, wouldn't it be nice? Not going to get that out of the Bush administration, though. That's Don Rumsfeld today saying he's not even going to let us know whether or not the military hit their recruiting goals this month. We'll just postpone the story here for another month. Welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from California to West Virginia, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius Satellite Radio Network, streaming around the planet on RadioPower.org, WhiteRoseSociety.org, Live 365 on American FM, and on cable systems in 29 states on CRN Digital. We have with us Ralph Neese. He's the... What's your title, Ralph? President?
President, right?
Yeah, Big Cheese, Chief Cook and Bottle Washer, the President of People for the American Way. By the way, if you'd like to call, if you have a question for Ralph or a comment, or you want, just want to say, hey, good job, and we've been getting your emails, whatever, our number 1-866-889-8894. Ralph, you're speaking, first of all, here at the conference, I assume?
Yeah, I had the responsibility of moderating the Supreme Court panel and what's been happening with the filibuster and the nuclear option and what to expect in a few minutes.
Was that this morning?
Yeah.
Okay, so what's the consensus? What's happening?
Well, there's no question, at least in the progressive community, that the most important domestic issue facing the nation right now is the future of the judiciary. And the next few weeks, the next few months, and certainly the next few years are going to decide what the law of the land will be, probably for the next 30 or 40 years. And we're trying to encourage a national public debate so people realize that their freedoms, their rights, their opportunities, things that have been taken for granted for the last 20, 30, 40 years are in risk right now. And if they get a Thomas Scalia report, it could turn back the clock 70 years.
And the cons are doing everything they can to make that happen as quickly as they can.
That's for sure.
I notice on your website, people can go to the website of People for American Way, pfaw.org, that don't let the Senate confirm Brown and Pryor. Now, Priscilla Owens has already gotten her vote. And I cringe at the thought of it. All three of these nominees are being promoted by the religious right as being pro-family values, anti-abortion, you know, blah, blah, blah. I mean, that's their thing. It sure seems to me like the religious conservatives are being played for suckers by the Republicans, because really, when you look at the voting records of these three people and most of Bush's nominees, there's really a corporate agenda behind all this, is there not?
It's a very interesting point. A lot of people think that this debate really is about the cultural wars, and it's about sexual orientation, or it's about freedom of reproductive choice, or it's about civil rights and the environment. It certainly is all of the above. But if I were on the radical religious right, I would feel a bit used right now, because I think many of the economic right-wingers are using the social justice conservatives as the troops for what they want to accomplish. And the big winners in recent years have certainly been the so-called free market advocates. And there's nothing wrong, of course, if capitalism is done right. But I would say in recent years, those who are in the special corporate interest world have been getting a windfall to the disadvantage of the vast majority of Americans. And unfortunately, there are not enough people bringing that to the attention of Americans, that we've got this situation where the economic rights of the corporation always trump the consumer rights and the environmental rights and everything else. So there's no question that the radical religious right and the economic right work together. But if I were part of the army on the ground, I think I would be a little bit feeling abused as to how this is working out.
And with regard to corporate rights, it goes beyond just economic rights.
Absolutely.
We have corporations now that have claimed Fourth Amendment rights of privacy. Dow Chemical sued the EPA and said that although Dow says to their employees, you walk on our premises, we can inspect your bodily fluids, we can listen in on your telephone conversations, we can videotape you, we can ask for, you know, we can read your emails, we, you know, ask for personal information. You have no rights of privacy. Nonetheless, Dow has asserted that they have rights of privacy 24 hours a day. And I mean, it's crazy. It's like a corporate takeover here that we have. We'll get back to what we can do about that and what People for the American Way is doing to help take back America, to help bring democracy back to the United States, with Ralph Neese, the president of People for the American Way, pfaw.org. I'm Tom Hartman. It's 29 minutes past the hour at the Take Back America Conference in Washington, D.C. We'll be right back.
listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's just
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, 33 minutes past the hour, or 27 before, as you may choose. We're talking with Ralph Neese, the president of People for the American Way, one of the finest and most active, successful, in my opinion, of the progressive organizations out there. Ralph, what is People for the American Way doing right now? What are the campaigns you're working on, and how can our listeners participate and or help you?
Our major issues, Tom, are civil rights, civil liberties, public education, and the judiciary. And we do a lot of civic participation work, voter registration, and, of course, last year our big election protection program. We had 25,000 volunteers making sure that people who cast votes had those votes count. Right now, though, there's no question that the future of the judiciary is the top issue, making sure that we save the filibuster and defeat the Karl Rove, Bill Frist, George W. Bush nuclear option, and making sure we look at who's going to be appointed to the court if there's a vacancy, and most people think that Rehnquist will retire at the end of the month. And with the future of the court at stake, that's where we have to devote our resources, and hopefully our 750,000 members and supporters will be joined by many, many others, and, of course, our partners in the Progressive Coalition.
Apparently one of the folks from the from Focus on the Family, not Dobson, but one of his right-hand guys, on national television a day or two ago said that when that Supreme Court justice opening opens, that he thinks that Owens, Pryor, or Brown should be put into that slot. Do you see Bush going for something that radical that fast? I mean, not that there's no shortage of other radical judges who are already sitting all across the United States.
I do think, unfortunately, that he will choose, as he does time and again, confrontation over collaboration and compromise and consensus. I'm not sure he would pick one of those three, but most likely someone quite comparable, with very little difference in judicial philosophy, maybe a little bit more judicial experience. But I wouldn't put it past him. Whenever we think he might try to work with Democrats and work with moderate Republicans, of course he reverts to form and sticks his finger in the eyes of the Democrats and the moderates.
Yeah.
And they've got an agenda, and they do want to turn back the clock. And they figure they've got 3 years left. And as he told his pioneers, that fundraising group back in September, I'll have an appointment sometime in the late spring, and I hope to have three more in addition to that. If that happens and he gets four Thomases or Scalia on that court, we will have a situation where not only will the clock be turned back on things that we care deeply about, but they will remove the constitutional basis for progressive government, rendering in many ways irrelevant what happens in our presidential and other kinds of elections, because the money won't be there if there's a permanent tax cut, and the constitutional authority won't be there.
It's breathtaking.
It's unbelievable.
It's
truly unbelievable.
It's really literally rolling back the New Deal. I mean,
yeah.
This is really
That's their goal.
Given that, in the context of that, do you think that the seven Democrats who were part of the Gang of 14, the so-called moderates, that they shot themselves and their party in the foot by cutting this deal?
I do think there were some objectionable parts of the deal, obviously allowing the votes for the three nominees we were talking about. On the other hand, there's no question the biggest losers were the radical religious right and Bill Frist and George W. Bush. Months ago, they thought they had a lock on the nuclear option, and that when they detonated it, it was a done deal. And thanks to 2 million Americans working through People for the American Way Foundation and Move On and other organizations, inundated the Senate with emails and petitions and telegrams and faxes. And all of a sudden, two-thirds of the American people are supporting the filibuster and opposing the nuclear option. I think it discombobulated Rove and Bush and Frist, and they suffered a big loss. But we know that this fight never ends. And we could come back 2 or 3 weeks from now, and they'll try to detonate the nuclear option again, or they could do it during a Supreme Court nomination. We have to hope those seven Democrats and those seven Republicans were acting in good faith, and that you can still filibuster, at least under some circumstances. And we hope that the Democrats and those moderate Republicans will show a lot of spine. There'll be profiles and courage. and be willing to take on the right. And they're much weaker in the last couple of months. The Scheibel decision was a big setback. The stem cell research issue is going to be another setback for the Republicans. The American people are not with the president right now. They're not with the Republicans.
You know, in the 30s, when Roosevelt was trying to get his folks on the Supreme Court,
yep.
The screaming headlines, the thing that Father Flanagan was ranting about on the radio, was court packing.
Yep.
That phrase was, everybody understands court packing.
Yep.
People may not understand filibusters or nuclear options or the subtleties of the court or you know, the ratios. They have no idea, you know, the history of the but they know what court packing means, even today.
Yep.
Why are you guys not using that phrase headline?
We certainly use it all the time. And, of course, that was a time when the Democratic majorities in the Senate were willing to stand up to a Democratic president. And I can remember working as a chief counsel to Republican senators when Republicans stood up to Richard Nixon. But Republicans don't seem to be willing to stand up to George W. Bush. We counted up 17 Republicans who said the nuclear option was a horrible idea. But in the end, they would support their party leadership. That is not exactly a vote of conscience. That is a vote,
that's a vote of fear.
It's a vote of the intimidation by Karl Rove and Bill Frist and George W. Bush.
The Republican Party is being run
like
the mob. It's being run like a crime family.
I made a statement an hour or two ago about everything that's happened in the last week or two, including the revelation of the person who was Deep Throat. And part of what I said was... if you look at the arrogance of power, the people from the early 1970s in the Nixon administration were unsophisticated rookies compared to the ruthless and the relentless intimidators, the gang of bullies that comes out of the White House and runs the House and the Senate.
Well, and in fact, Woodward and Bernstein would be facing jail time right now, just like Judy Miller is from the New York Times,
and Miller,
if this were done today. Do you mind taking a quick call? I know you have to get going.
Do
you mind taking a quick call from one of our guests? Okay, Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Roy, welcome to the program.
Hey, good morning. Boy, I sure appreciate your guest and admire all the work that you're doing. I'd like to get his comments on three specific things. In the Fort Worth newspaper this morning, they were talking that the governor of Texas is going to sign an anti-abortion and an anti-gay bill in the Calvary Chapel in Fort Worth, Texas on Sunday. Secondly, I'd like to comment on the big coalition of pastors in Ohio that are doing their thing to become political. And then there's a bill in the House that are talking about letting pastors be able to make political statements from the pulpit
without losing tax exempt status.
So I'll let him use that for a launching point.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Roy.
Thanks.
Ralph Neese of People for the American Way.
Roy, I think one of the most frightening developments in recent months, and Justice Sunday was one example of it, the Scheibel case was another example, is the radical religious right and how much George W. Bush and Bill Frist and Tom DeLay owe them. To paraphrase Dick Cheney from a couple years ago, they owe them big time. And they're running the show right now in terms of their agenda. And one of the most disturbing things about Justice Sunday was the charge against us and others that we were filibustering against people of faith, that we were discriminating against people of faith. You know, it's okay for pastors and for people of faith to be involved in the political process. In fact, I would encourage all of us who are people of faith to allow our faith to help guide us. Certainly the Sermon on the Mount guides me every day. But you can't cross the line. You cannot be in a position where you are endorsing political candidates, Republicans or Democrats. And certainly I think it's religious McCarthyism to be accusing those who are opposing the public records of various judicial nominees of being anti-Catholic or anti-Christian or anti-Latino or anti-African-American. This is very scary, and I think we have to make sure that Americans are telling both Republicans and Democrats and the President of the United States that they're crossing the line, they're going beyond the pale, and that this is unacceptable.
And it is. Tom in Minneapolis, I believe it is. Yeah, in Minnesota. Hey, Tom.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention, Tom, you brought up a good term about court packing, and your guest said he is using it. Well, it ain't working. You got to use it more and more because it ain't being spread in the echo chamber. So marketing 101, repeat, repeat, repeat it because that will work.
Okay.
Court packing scheme.
Got it, Tom. Thanks a lot.
One of the great consequences of the last 10 weeks, People Four did a $5 million messaging, which was basically repeating basic messages, and to my pleasant surprise, I didn't think things would take hold so much, but two-thirds of the American people support the filibuster now and oppose the nuclear option. Two-thirds of the American people want a 60-vote threshold with respect to judicial nominations, federal judicial nominations that are for life. So common sense Republicans and Democrats agree with People's American Way and the progressive community, and Harry Reid and Dick Durbin, who are doing such a tremendous job. And hopefully we can translate that public support. And I couldn't agree more with the repetition of the message. That's one thing I learned from Ronald Reagan back in the 1980s when I led the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights. You got to repeat it and repeat it and repeat it and repeat it. And court packing and radical right and turning back the clock. I know a lot of people who closely pay attention to people before go, oh, my Lord, I wish you would use some new words. But you've got to stay on message, just as the presidents do, and hope you're going to reach enough people over time.
Long after us political junkies are tired, sick and tired of it, it's just beginning to sink in to most of America.
Exactly.
Ralph Neese from the People for the American Way, PFAW.org. Thanks so much for being
thanks
with
for
us
having
today.
Me, Tom.
I really do appreciate it, Ralph. You're doing great work, and keep it up. It's one of the finest organizations in America. Thanks. And really great of Ralph to join us now. Right at this moment, you probably notice it's a lot quieter in here. John Edwards is upstairs giving his speech. And so it was particularly kind of Ralph to take time out from that and come on our program. Lobbyist Scalp Donaldson. Have you caught this? The Wall Street Journal reported that William Donaldson, this the former chairman of the Securities and Exchange Commission, is toast. He's out of here. And he's going to be replaced by a guy who has taken over $600,000 from corporate interests. Absolutely mind-boggling. Absolutely mind-boggling. And it's the takeover of America. Is your bio on there?
No, it's not.
Ah, okay. In that case, I just need anything with a name.
Sure.
Or let's just do this. The folks here are so kind. Put your headphones on. Folks here are so kind in bringing me guests, and you are.
Luis Miranda.
Hey, Luis.
How are
and,
you?
Great. Luis Miranda. And Luis,
I'm the spokesperson for the Democratic National Committee.
Ah, so great. Yeah. Okay. It's great. The Democratic. I have a question for you, Luis.
Sure.
If his mic's not on. I'm sorry. There we go. Say hi.
Hi.
Okay. Now his mic is on. All right. Luis, if we look at a program that the Democratic National, the Democratic Party nationally funded in the Ukraine, the Republicans also funded it, but it was funded in part by these two parties, where they brought a group of half a dozen or so, I believe it was seven young men over from Serbia. They did this in Serbia. They did it in Soviet Georgia. They tried to do it in Belarus unsuccessfully. They brought them over to the Ukraine. They came up with a logo, a ticking clock. They came up with a slogan, his time is up. They came up with a color, orange. They branded voting theft before the election happened. They branded voting theft, and they put into place all across the Ukraine exit polls, which were funded by us, by our political parties. And because they knew or they guessed that election fraud was going to happen. And the minute, the evening after the polls closed, they publicized, and they had no access to the media because it was sort of like our corporate media. The media was controlled by the state. They publicized on the internet and in like get-togethers all across the country, hey, the election was stolen. The exit polls show that our guy won, and the official results, well, they didn't even say what the official results. They didn't even say the election was stolen. The exit polls proved that our guy won, and that was the first expectation. Why? We've had now three elections that are under a cloud. We know that in 2000, George W. Bush actually lost the state of Florida. The New York Times reported that when the consortium counted all the votes, by any measure, pregnant chads, hanging chads, however you do it, that Al Gore actually got more votes than George Bush in Florida if you counted all of the citizens of Florida. So the 2000 vote was stolen. John Conyers has, in my opinion, you read his findings in the Conyers report, found that the 2004 election was stolen in Ohio. And you've got the 2002 election with a huge cloud over, particularly in Georgia, where it looks like all the polls show that Max Cleland won, and yet the electronic voting machines and no paper trails say that Saxby Chambliss won. Why isn't the Democratic Party doing in the United States what the Democratic Party helped fund in Serbia, the Ukraine, Belarus, and Soviet Georgia?
Well, you know, comparing to Ukraine is a little, you know, it's apples and oranges, really.
Why?
It's emerging democracies. We have a democracy that's been in place for 200 years. And really what we have to look at is moving forward, not getting stuck on what happened in 2000.
I'm talking about 2006.
Right.
Why are you guys
so
not
we look
putting
forward
this in
2006,
place for 2006?
We have to look at how do we prevent the type of discrimination that Ken Mellman went to Virginia and said that they're going to carry out there, where they're going to have people contesting the votes of voters in precincts, which is
right,
really...
Right, that's what they did in Ohio.
Exactly, that's what they did in Ohio. It's what they're going to try to do in Virginia. We're calling on them to retract from that and to stop the type of voter intimidation that, you know, made Florida famous and that they're trying to do again in Virginia. That's something that we are fighting for, but we got to look forward and we got to look at how we improve the system in the future so that we don't have doubts about whether or not the vote was legitimate, what the results were. But we have to do it moving forward. We can't get stuck in the past, but we have to learn our lessons.
I'm just using the past. In my opinion, we have three stolen elections here, and certainly, you know, huge.
And look, and I'm a veteran of the 2000 recount, so I'm as sensitive about what happened in Florida as anyone.
Yeah, and not to mention the fact that even forget about the recount, that somewhere between 50 and 100,000 African Americans got thrown off the voter list in Florida.
And our challenge is to communicate that to the voters. And both African American and Hispanic, for example, Ken Mellman's going out there to both communities and saying, give us a chance and we'll give you a choice. What we're seeing with the choice is the choice that they really want to offer is one where we don't respect people's votes. We see that in his comments in Virginia just a day after saying it to African American communities. We see that in what they're doing with Social Security and health care. And, you know, Governor Deem this morning talked about pensions. We should believe in a secure retirement in this country. It's a democratic value. It's an American value. We respect what workers
are
doing.
These are important issues. We're talking with Luis Miranda of the DNC, a spokesperson for the Democratic National Committee. We will be back after this. It's Tom Hartman, 50 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. The support group, the radio support group, I'm buying for We the People. Live 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, and Dave in Humboldt County is on the line. Dave, you're live with Luis Miranda. The spokesperson, a spokesperson for the DNC, not the A, right?
A.
Or D. A. Okay.
Luis. There's a few of us.
There you go. And Dave in Humboldt County on the line. Hey, Dave, what's on your mind?
Well, Luis, I'm very hopeful that I can impress upon you the importance of the subject that Tom has just been talking about. Democrats are losing, not because there's not enough votes, not because we don't stand for a lot of good things. It is because these corporatists have taken control of the mechanics of the election. I believe that they can throw it completely, even if we win by 60-70%. I believe that now because they've been adding these machines and adding them. We've heard the fellow that designed these for the Republicans. They are being increased now under this Help America Vote Act. They're being put in all over the place. Those machines decide who wins the election.
Okay, we got your point, Dave. Let's let Luis respond to it.
Look, that's why one of the things we're doing is strengthening state parties. And Governor Dean's going out there and saying, we can't have an 18-state campaign. We need to be focused on elections nationally and really understand how both we organize our people on the ground and also how we better work the mechanics of the election to make sure that we prevent the type of fraud that we've seen in the past.
Shouldn't the bottom line be that a private for-profit corporation by law should be barred from handling our votes?
Well,
I mean, if we're not going to privatize the police department because they would be subject to corruption, we're not going to privatize the fire department, why have we privatized the votes?
I think at the end of the day, we have to make sure that each and every one of those votes is both counted and countable. I think there needs to be a paper trail, and we need to have a means to go back and double-check that the results that we're seeing at the end of the night are the results of the actual votes of the people who went out and stood in line.
I agree with all
and
that.
And exercised their constitutional
and
right.
Why have a private for-profit corporation involved in the process at all?
I don't think
you got Wall Ali O'Dell, the chairman of Diebold, coming out and saying, we're going to deliver Ohio for George W. Bush.
Right. I think it's more about keeping those corporations accountable, making sure that the process is fair, making sure that there's a paper trail so that they can take advantage of the
system.
Why
not just get them out?
I don't know that we need to keep them out as much as make sure that they're following the process, that we have a means to double-check that the votes that are being reported are accurate and that
so
we're having elections.
So privatizing our elections is okay?
I don't think we need to privatize or socialize our elections. I think we need to make sure that the votes are counted and that the actual results that we're seeing at the end of the night are the results of the voters who cast them.
Okay. Luis Miranda, spokesperson for the DNC. Very
Tom's
articulate. You've done a great job. Thank you so much for being with us, Luis.
Thank
I
you.
Appreciate it. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. We will be back after the news at the top of the hour.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Exposes political corruption and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from California to West Virginia, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, Live 365's American FM, WhiteRoseSociety.org, and on cable systems in 29 states on CRN Digital. Welcome back to our program. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894, toll-free across the United States. TomHartman.com if you want to drop into our live chat room, which is already well-populated with folks from two different continents so far, as we can see. Susie Turnbull, or Susan?
Susan.
Susan Turnbull. That is the vice chairperson, the right-hand person, number two person with Howard Dean, or you and Howard Dean basically run the Democratic National Committee?
We were both elected on the same day in February with the rest of the officers of the DNC.
That's great. I am impressed. I'm and pleased to have somebody there who's like at a conference for progressives. You know, it so concerns me that the Democratic Party... My sense of it is that the Democratic Party came within inches back in the early 90s of becoming essentially what the Republican Party was in the 1950s, and which isn't necessarily a bad thing, except that there needs to be a progressive balance to it. I mean, the Republican Party has become what I don't think we have any precedent for in American politics, what arguably what John Adams was all about. I mean, that's the last time, you know, the Alien Sedition Acts and throwing newspaper editors in jail and things like that. The Republican Party has swung so far to the right, and the Democratic Party. Do you see the Democratic Party coming back to its historic roots? I mean, this is the oldest. Thomas Jefferson founded this party. Although if you go to whitehouse.gov, it says that Jefferson and Madison and Monroe and Jackson were all Republicans. Nonetheless, it does. It actually does in their biographies. They've rewritten history. The Republican Party wasn't even created until 1956 in Jackson, Michigan, 1856. But do you think that the Democratic Party is coming back to its roots as the party of the people, or do you think that the DLC element of let's bring the corporations in because that's where the money is still has a chance of taking over the party?
I think there's a real focus at the Democratic National Committee right now and in the Democratic Party to take the party to the people. And when I say that, I mean going to 50 states. A lot of people, all of us, were very concerned last election and the election before that, quite frankly, when we were just competing in 18 states. Mm-hmm. And there was no opportunity. If you lost one of those states, then you lost the election. We can't deal with it that way anymore. We also can't have a Congress that is given a free ride either. So what we're trying to do is making sure that we have people in the grassroots, people in our farm teams to build them up. So how are we going to do this? It's a 50-state strategy. That's the plan. The plan right now is working with state parties across this country, working with allied organizations across this country to make sure that people have an opportunity to participate and that they're being heard. One of our plans is to make sure that people will have an opportunity to deal with and let us know about what issues are most important to them so that the issues aren't what's coming down from Washington, but instead what's coming up from the grassroots.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's marvelous. I mean, that's going back to the 30s. This is going back to the... And what's remarkable is when you look at the history of the Democratic Party, in the 20th century, for example, there were two elections where Democrats won at the national level by an absolute landslide. And that was Roosevelt's first re-election and LBJ's re-election. And it was after LBJ rolled out the Great Society and after Roosevelt rolled out the New Deal. The people of America really want to embrace progressive politics, and the Democratic Party has gotten so timid about these things. Historic, you know... I
think that they've given us great opportunity this year, meaning on the Republican side. What George Bush has done is exactly what you were talking about, was swinging this pendulum.
Yeah.
I mean, it has swung so far. I worked on the Hill in the late 70s, early 80s, and you had progressive Republicans at that time. You had people who thought of things, liberal Republicans. Well, a liberal Republican right now is Orrin Hatch.
Yeah.
And that's that.
I know.
The
it's
notion of it is stunning.
Spooky.
It's spooky. And it's also what the Republicans have done this year in dealing with the Schiavo case, where they were intruding on a family's most important and personal decision-making, when to do what they're trying to do with Social Security, which is, in fact, do away with Social Security.
Right.
Those are things that have really hit people right in the gut, and
yeah.
I think that we're going to win elections by dealing with people's gut and people's hearts.
Yeah, but it has to be more than just saying, look at those Republicans, they overreached. We have to say, hey, we've got something for you. I have a question. The Democratic Party and the Republican Party both helped fund an effort in the Ukraine. This started about 3 months before the election in the Ukraine, and they actually brought in a group of people from Serbia. And there was a fascinating article about this in The Independent. It was been reported in The New York Times. I wrote a piece about it that's gotten around a lot and Common Dreams and whatnot. And there's this group of guys in Serbia. They did this in Serbia. They did it in Belarus unsuccessfully. They did it in Soviet Georgia successfully. And they did it in the Ukraine. They came in before the election actually happened. And they said, we suspect that the party in power is going to use a variety of means to try and steal the election. They're going to disenfranchise voters. They're going to tell people they're not on the voting rolls. They're going to tell them that they're felons when they're not. You know, I don't think most of these countries had voting machines that could be rigged, but if they did, they would be talking about that. Whatever. They said, there's going to be vote fraud going on, and we're going to be ready for it. And so in the Ukraine, for example, this effort, which was funded by your party, paid for these guys to come in, and they came up with a logo. In the case of the Ukraine, it was a ticking clock, and it was stenciled. They had stencils all over the country. People had stencils. So you could go out with a spray can and spray it on the wall or on a sidewalk, ticking clock, and a slogan, his time is up, or the name of the guy, his, you know, Joe Blow's time is up. I can't pronounce his name. The guy who used to be the president of the Ukraine. And they had the orange, you know, as the color. They branded it with a color, and we funded national exit polls. And within 15 minutes of the polls closing, the results of those exit polls, no matter what they were, it was right up front. Everybody understood, if we win, we win. If we lose, we lose. We're going to publicize what the exit polls really say. The exit polls were so widely publicized, and they had no support from the national media, which was entirely controlled by the family of the people in power. But they did it on the internet, and they did it in cafes, and they did it with meetups, and they did it people running out in the streets. When people realized that the exit polls showed that their side had won, there was no way that the party in power could claim legitimacy. If we had done that in 2004, when the exit polls showed that John Kerry won by 3 points, I have a feeling that we would have looked more carefully at Ohio and a few other states and said, hey, maybe there's something going on here. Or in 2000, we would have looked more carefully at Florida. Why is the Democratic Party not funding right now exit polls in all 50 states at the precinct level to prepare for election fraud in the 2006 election, since we already know, Ken Mellman has already come out and said they're going to do in Virginia what they did in Ohio. Why not?
I think part of it is what we are doing different things. We're doing something very differently. In 2000, the big issue was people being turned away from the polls, people being challenged. So what did Congress do and what did the Democrats do? We said, okay, we're going to be prepared in the 2004 elections. We're going to have lawyers at every polling place. We're going to make sure that people are out there and that everyone has the opportunity to vote, that they're going to have provisional ballots, that they're going to be out there. Well, obviously, it didn't make any difference.
No,
because they changed it. They weren't challenging people's vote.
Well, because they rigged it in advance. They knocked 70,000 people off the voting rolls.
That's number one. And another thing that they did this time, which was pretty remarkable, and I actually grew up in Ohio, and so for me this made terrible sense. They had limited numbers of polling booths in certain precincts where they would have extended numbers of polling booths in other places. So we were behind the eight ball as to what they were doing. And then there's the whole issue that all of us need to really look at is not having a paper trail and not having more appropriate standards for our machines. What the DNC is doing, what the Democratic Party is doing right now is twofold. One is we're starting from today, and I mean, actually, it started about a month and a half ago. We have a lawyers' committee. We're having a brand new lawyers' committee that is looking not only at election day, but all the days leading up to election day as well, so that we have someone who is going to be paying attention to every race and every elected official or appointed official that ever touches a ballot. We're talking secretaries of state, like in Ohio and Florida. We're talking about county clerks. We're talking about figuring out who's involved and how to make sure that we can deal with that.
But when people hear from lawyers, they think, oh, there's a dispute. When people hear that the exit polls showed that John Kerry won, for example, I realize that's the past, but when the people hear that the exit polls say such and such, then you've put the other side, the side that's committing the vote fraud, in the position of trying to have to defend themselves. And that can be tremendously successful. I'm really struck by the fact that Karl Rove and Kem Mellman have both come out and said that there should not be national exit polls. And I think the reason why they're so opposed to national exit polls is because that's the tool that can stop them.
I don't know.
In the court of public opinion.
When you think about it, there's been such a trend for early voting and for vote by mail now that an exit poll does not necessarily really indicate who voted.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly if you go to Oregon, for example, you're going to have 90% of people are voting by mail at this point in Oregon.
Yeah.
So the people who are showing up at the polls are not who can be interviewed, actually interviewed. It's not.
But then you do old-fashioned polling. You do traditional kind of polling on election day. For whom did you vote?
Right. I mean, you can do that.
Call
of
them
course.
Up.
Yeah, but I think that all polls are subject to some question.
So you don't see that as a solution.
I don't really see that as a solution.
Then the larger question: if we in America hold that there are some things that are too important to privatize. We don't want to privatize our police department. We don't want our police department to be exploited for profit. We don't want our fire departments privatized. We don't want our army privatized. In many communities, we don't want our water or septic, sewage systems privatized. Because private corporations, correctly so, have as their first goal to make a profit and their second goal to do whatever it is. You know, historically, we didn't have hospitals privatized or even health insurance companies. They had to be nonprofit organizations. Why have we privatized the vote? Why have we allowed that to happen? Why are private for-profit corporations handling in secret our votes and telling us that they won't tell us how they're calculating the votes? The software is proprietary.
I mean, there's no excuse for that. There's absolutely no excuse for that. And I think that we're going to find over the next 2 years, particularly leading up to the next election, that there's going to be tremendous attention paid to the notion of privatization of our electrical system.
Yeah, because it's happened. I mean, you know, it's about 80% of our votes were handled by private corporations in this last cycle. It's like, wow. Anyway, we're talking with Susan Turnbull, who is the vice chair of the Democratic National Committee. Susan, I believe you had to move along. It's a shame. I'd love to talk with you longer. There's so many other things that we could be talking about. If you get a chance, feel free to come back some other time.
Okay.
Susan, thanks so much.
Tom.
It's great to have you on.
Pleasure to be with you.
20 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're all stuck between a rock and a hard place. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service is with us. Hey, Ellen.
Hey, well, you've got a caller, no?
We do, okay. Yes. In fact, I figured we could both answer our you know, Lynn in Eureka, California is on the line. Hey, Lynn, welcome to the program.
Hi. You know, I'm just calling. I was hoping to catch the DNC folks because I am just livid here. These guys don't get it. They're not standing up for us. And I'm, you know, you talked me into not voting for Ralph Nader last time, and I voted for Kerry, whom I used to admire. But I'm not going to do it anymore. This guy, the first guy from the DNC you had on there, took your good idea and turned it into a socialist idea.
I know. There wasn't time to challenge him, but you know, he was just doing. He's a young kid, and he was just doing his talking points.
I didn't know he was young, but he's got a position, and he's that. I'm a lifelong Democrat, and I'm having a really hard time here with these folks. And I don't know. I want to scream. I want to beat somebody
well,
up.
Well, I'll tell you the answer, Lynn. The answer is not to go out and vote for George W. Bush or for more Republicans. The answer is to get active in the Democratic Party. The only reason that you have any progressives at all in the Democratic Party is because people like you and me have actually got active in the Democratic Party.
I would never vote for George Bush. That could never happen. I'd cut off my arm first.
Yeah, well, then, you know, we got to participate in democracy. Lynn, thanks for the call.
Well, I'm thinking I'm voting for Nader next time.
Well, you know, that's a possibility, too, and you may send a message to the Democrats, or you may end up with fascists running the country.
I didn't get anything this time, so yeah. I'm not going to lose anything. All right, bye.
Okay, thanks, Lynn. Good to hear from you.
Well, I just have one comment, which is that my take is that most Democrats don't have a spine. You couldn't find it. They're jellyfish. But I do think Howard Dean does have a spine. I may not agree with him on everything, but I think the guy has some guts. And I'm glad he's not backing down on the stuff about delay. And I'll tell you, just after hearing him today, and you interviewed him too,
yeah.
I like Howard. I think he has spine.
Yeah.
He's too much in the middle for my tastes, but he's got spine.
Yeah, I agree with you. And he was the governor of the state that I lived in for 10 years. Plus,
he's kind of cute.
he's a good guy. It's funny, I shared a podium with his brother, Jim, in Oregon.
Jim the doctor?
Howard's the doctor.
Jim, right.
Jim's the perennial businessman.
I'm thinking of his roommate in college.
Yeah,
right.
No. And it was interesting getting to know him. His brother's quite a guy. So what's going on here? What's going on in the news?
A couple things. One, you know, they nominated Chris Cox as SEC chair.
Yes.
And what's happening with that, it's interesting. I mean, you know, praise from all the industry, et cetera. Praise from other people. He's going to be tough on enforcement. But the industry is essentially saying that he is now coming out and perhaps looking at long-term issues, not necessarily immediate enforcement issues. And
In other words, let's not enforce the law anymore. Let's just have a conversation.
Well, that he's going to be looking at long-term investments, things such as that, but not necessarily looking at some investments that...
Yeah. Well, this was everybody's complaint about Donaldson, is he was too aggressive in enforcing the law. So get rid of him.
Right. The other thing that's interesting is that there's going to be another... Well, yesterday, the DOD, Department of Defense, said, okay, we are going to open up your... We'll open up the documents and we'll put them, all these documents on the base closures, and we're going to put them in one room. And you can come see them, but we're going to make them so that they're classified. Therefore, people cannot use them to make or break the argument local governments can't make about the BRAC situation. Well, Lieberman and Collins, who are both two senators, she the chair, and he the ranking member on this committee, are saying, we're going to subpoena these because both of them, their states got really hurt in this BRAC closure.
Oh.
And you wonder, who was the idiot in the White House? If you're going to go after closing certain bases, don't go after where you have a ranking member and chair running the committee because they will subpoena it, and that's and Collins and Lieberman are on the same page.
Yeah, these people are as incompetent and tone-deaf when it comes to simple domestic policies and politics as they are with regard to policy. I mean, going after Social Security, going after, you know.
You know, I also had lunch with a friend of mine and who keeps me informed of what's going on in the government, my dear friend Webb Hubble. That's where I was having lunch with my friend Webb. And he's also saying what's going on in the Labor Department is they're going to go after unions and asking them, even if somebody takes them out for a cup of coffee, they have to submit a slip.
Amazing.
When you stop by Napa and spend $40 or more, you'll get a free limited edition Napa.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Yes, time is on our side. It's what goes around comes around. What's the old saying? That things go in cycles, let's say. You know, it has become now time for us to take back America. I'm broadcasting live, in fact, from the Take Back America conference in Washington, D.C. And I just want to speak to Lynn's point. Lynn from California, who called a few minutes ago and was talking about, you know, the Democrats are not doing what you like. And I agree to some extent. They're doing an awful lot that's good, and they're moving in the right direction very quickly, I might add, compared to where they were going under Clinton, frankly. But still, they have a ways to go. You know, I strongly think that. And we had the DNC spokesman on, who says, well, you know, privatizing the vote is not a bad thing. And then you had the vice chairman, the number two person in the DNC, and she says, privatizing the vote is outrageous. So, first of all, don't get too hysterical or don't get too concerned, because, as you know, it's like Will Rogers said, you know, I don't belong to an organized political party. I'm a Democrat. You're going to get a bunch of different voices saying a bunch of different things. But the bigger issue here is, I remember during the last election campaign, and this is so vital that people in America get this, and most people don't get it. I remember during the last election campaign, young person I know who is going to college, and Ralph Nader came to his college and gave a speech and said, you know, in France they have more than two parties, in England they have more than two parties, in Germany they have more than two parties, in Israel they have more than two parties. Why is it that we don't have more than two parties in the United States who are, you know, real players and have met people, you know, with seats in the House of Representatives and the Senate? Why is that? It's because of a conspiracy between the Democrats and the Republicans, a nasty Democrat. And this was Ralph Nader's whole rant. And it's based on a lie. Which just, you know, absolutely boggled my mind that he was suggesting that the reason why third parties and fourth parties and fifth parties work in other countries and don't work in the United States is because of some conspiracy between the Republicans and Democrats. Not true. This is a struggle that the founders were dealing with. We are one of only five nations in the world that has first past the post winner take all voting. The United States, Greece, New Zealand, Australia, and arguably to some small extent, you know, you could say Canada and the UK, to some extent, Canada in any case. But they've gone a long way towards fixing that. But the bottom line is that when the founders of this country were first putting together this country, that they were struggling with this issue. How do you have democracy when you have a situation where if more than two parties are participating, then, you know, say you have three parties, and two parties get 33% of the vote, the third party gets 34% of the vote. Now you have 34% of the voters making the decisions for the whole country. That's not democratic. James Madison, in Federalist Number 10, ranted at length about this. He begged people. He said, the solution to this problem is to not have political parties. That was the best they could come up with. They didn't know what to do about it. It wasn't until 1861 that John Stuart Mill came along and invented proportional representation, where he said, hey, why don't we do it where you vote for the party, and if there's 100 seats in Parliament and a party gets 10% of the vote, they get 10 seats. They get 15% of the vote, they get 15 seats. And then you can have multi-party elections. And that's how it works in most of the rest of the world. But it's not, you know, when the founders put together our form of government, they hadn't thought of that. 1861 was 70 years after the Constitution was ratified. 72 years, exactly. And they just hadn't thought of it. And the best Madison could do, and as I said, you need to go back and read Federalist Number 10 if you have any thoughts on this. the best they could do was beg us not to form political parties. And boom, you know, under George Washington there weren't. But by the time John Adams came along, you had the Democrats, you had the Republicans, you had who joined to become the Democratic Republicans, which is today known as the Democratic Party. You had the Federalists, who were, you know, Adams' party, which imploded in the 1820s. You had, you know, this was the history of American, the American electorate. And so we have a system in the United States that, to this day, unless we were to have a constitutional convention and say, okay, we're going to do what the rest of the world has done and go to proportional representation, which isn't going to happen. You know, it's just not going to happen. We're not going to amend the Constitution for that. Or until we go to instant runoff voting, which is happening. It's over 300 communities across the United States now. And ironically, or not ironically, you know, just factually, the Green Party is leading that charge, and I'd love to see the Democratic Party get on board with that. But nonetheless, the point is, until we have either instant runoff voting or proportional representation, we're stuck with a two-party system. And this is the grand conundrum that Republicans or conservatives were facing in the 1960s when Barry Goldwater went down in flames in 64, was, what do you do? We're stuck with a two-party system. What do you do? How do you deal with that? And they said, the conservatives in 64 said, we'll take over one of the parties. And they did. They took over the Republican Party. And so what I say to my progressive friends who call in, and, you know, as Lynn did from California just a minute ago and said, you know, I'm giving up on the Democratic Party. I'm going away. They're not doing anything for me, is that, hey, we have a two-party system here, whether you like it or not. What, you know, for better or for worse, two-party system, we're stuck with it. If you want to get involved, take over one of the parties. Take over the Democratic Party. That's what we need to be doing. We need to be getting active, infiltrating, and getting involved, participating, not just throwing up your hands and saying, oh, they're not, you know, they're still tolerating people who think that women who have abortions should go to prison. Well, yeah, there may be some folks like that in there. Or worse, they're still tolerating the electronic voting machine. Yeah, maybe. But we can change that if enough of us get involved. It's really very simple. It's really very straightforward. This is what politics is all about. This is what electoral politics is all about. And so, I have to say, I encourage people to join and participate with the Green Party and the Progressive Party in Vermont. And I don't know if it's in any other states, but certainly in Vermont, the Progressive Party is much larger than the Green Party. I encourage people to do that. And at the same time, join either the Democratic or the Republican Party and show up for the meetings and participate in the meetings and help take over those parties. Because if you know, use the Green Party, help grow the Green Party. When we have instant runoff voting, we need the Green Party. We don't want, I'm not here saying we need to kill off third parties or fourth parties or fifth parties. But if you put all of your effort into a third or beyond party, then you're really not playing in the game of American politics, unfortunately. Absolutely unfortunately. But, you know, that's the reality. That's the tragic reality. But if you play in that third party, if you join the Green Party, the local Green Party, and get in there and get involved and you know, help bring about voting reform and bring instant runoff voting to your community. I mean, look at San Francisco. You've got, you know, the mayor of San Francisco, the chairman of the city council, San Francisco, Green. I mean, isn't this great? And they've got instant runoff voting now. This is a major city in the United States. This is the kind of thing that can happen if people get involved. But don't just stop there. Get involved with Democratic Party politics as well. We have to get involved in the major parties. If we don't get involved in the major parties, then what's going to happen is we're just going to be sitting around talking to ourselves. And the Republicans so figured this out in the 60s. And it took them a couple of years. It took them actually about, 16 years? From 64 to 1980? It took them 16 years to get Ronald Reagan into office. And even at that, they had to use subterfuge. You know, George Bush had to cut a deal with the Ayatollahs in Iran to hold the hostages in order for Ronald Reagan to beat Jimmy Carter. But nonetheless, you know, 16 years, they got in. I'm not suggesting that the Democratic Party should be using subterfuge. Because, frankly, we actually represent the majority. we're the ones who are the majority. You know, progressives in America, we call ourselves progressive. It's the mainstream. The mainstream, you look at the polls, 70, 80% of Americans want national health care. They want a good health care system that's reliable, that's safe, that is paid for collectively, that's part of the commons, just like our fire departments and our police department and our army. The vast majority of Americans want that. The vast majority of Americans don't want corporations running our voting. The vast majority of Americans, you know, want good schools. They want good public education. They believe that, you know, people should have... They absolutely believe, yes, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, and they believe that folks don't have bootstraps. We have an obligation as a society to help them get some. The vast majority of Americans don't believe in the neo-Darwinian notion that people who are rich only by virtue of the fact that they're virtuous, and people who are poor are only poor because of by virtue of the fact that they're no good. The vast majority of people in America believe instead that we all have inherent value, that we all have tremendous potential. And you look at nations that have risen, that have become successful, and you know, you see that they're nations that reached out to their people and said, you know, we're going to help bring you up, we're going to help raise you up, we're going to make things possible. We believe that you're only as strong as your weakest link, that society is only as strong as its weakest link, not the old, you know, let the most powerful rule, but rather we're only as strong as our weakest link. And therefore, collectively, if we want to strengthen society, we do that not by giving more power and more wealth to those at the top, but by making sure that the links in the chain are stronger. This is just very straightforward stuff. People say, "Oh, that's a liberal." No, I'm sorry. This is Main Street America speaking. This is mainstream America speaking. We have been listening to right-wing cranks on the radio so long that we've forgotten. We have absolutely forgotten what's going on. Yeah. So and lost touch with them. You know, mainstream America. So I think it's important. You know, even if you don't like what you hear from all Democrats, don't give up. Get involved. You know, success is the best revenge. Very, very. It's a simple message. Very simple message. We're broadcasting live from the Take Back America Conference here in Washington, D.C. And Luis Navarro is with us. Hey, Luis, glad to have you here. Former political director for John Kerry's presidential campaign, right?
Yes, just up through the Iowa caucuses.
Ah, well, it was a good start. It's, do you have any idea, Luis, why John Kerry did not fight as hard in Ohio as Michael Bednarik and David Cobb did?
You know, I think that the challenge for John Kerry universally, and this is not exclusive to Ohio, was simply lacking a coherent narrative, mm-hmm. that gave the rationale for overcoming George Bush's strength on the national security issue.
Right.
I think that was clear through his response on the Iraq question, and I think more importantly for a lot of your listeners in the progressive community overall is the lack of a coherent agenda around what a Kerry administration would do that would be of benefit to the broader working and middle-class families of America.
So what would you have advised him to do had you been participating in the national campaign?
I think there were three things that needed to happen. One, in a world of increasing narrow casting, the preeminence of radio and the Internet, that it is more important for you to identify those universe of voters that you expect to get the largest margins from and continually broadcast a message. One of the clear differences between how the Republicans addressed their electorate was they constantly sought to grow their base. So you activating the evangelical Christian community, the small business community, the suburban and exurban moms, was a significant difference from the way John Kerry relied on, I think, broadcast media and sort of broad swath messaging,
right.
That was not designed to activate individual constituencies.
Well, one of the things that I noticed about the way that the Republicans activated their base was they did it with fear.
Absolutely.
They did it by scaring people. They did it by scaring people about security. The gays are going to get you.
Right.
The anti-gun people are going to make you insecure. The criminals are going to come and get you. The welfare mothers are going to take away your tax dollars. You know, blah, blah, blah. It was all about fear. And I'm not suggesting that the Democratic Party should become all about fear. I think that would be suicide. But the one thing that I have noticed is that the minute that you start explaining, you're dead. And one of the things that the Republicans have been brilliant about is going on the attack and forcing Democrats to explain. Whereas what Democrats have been incompetent about is attacking Republicans. I mean, why aren't the Democrats out there right now saying, hey, the Republicans are engaged in a court-packing scheme, and let the Republicans try to explain that they're not?
I think you've identified one of the key differences between Democrats and Republicans, which is we have lost the ability to identify clear villains to the electorate.
Yeah.
You have those in the party who don't want to demonify business, those in the party who don't want to seem too beholden to quote-unquote special interests, which just happen to be most of the progressive wing of the party.
Right.
And so by lacking a means by which to say, here is the problem, here is what's keeping that problem from being resolved, here's our solution through those folks,
right,
we lack a strong, compelling message as to why us as opposed to anyone else.
Yeah, and boiling it down to a sentence and a metaphor.
Correct.
You know, and so what can be done to help the Democratic Party figure this out? I'm talking with Luis Navarro, who's the former political director for the John Kerry presidential campaign up till Iowa.
I think, again, there are three things. Number one, we have to have a clear voice as to how we are going to beat back the efforts of the evangelical, Christian, and business community to deny working families their seat at the table, if you will, their ability to achieve
economic justice. But that's kind of phrased reactively. Mm-hmm. Why not be proactive and say what we need to do is stop the attacks by the business community on working Americans, and we need to stop the evangelicals from trying to get into our bedrooms? Why not phrase it as we're trying to hold off the hordes at the gate?
I think it's a fine characterization. I think, again, it's mostly about identifying who the problem is,
right,
and saying what we will do in opposition to that.
Right. Because, I mean, these guys are hell-bent for leather on just ripping apart the middle class in America. And you know, listening to our phone conversations and getting our emails and reading our mail and you know, on and on it goes. We're going to be back in just a minute. Luis Navarro is with us. Luis, mm-hmm. Am I pronouncing that right?
Absolutely.
The former political director for the John Kerry presidential campaign. It's 50 minutes past the hour, 10 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We shall return.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Till the next time, say goodbye.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting on radio stations from coast to coast, and the Sirius Radio satellite radio system, streaming around the planet, radiopower.org, Live 365, WhiteRoseSociety.org, and so on and so forth. Welcome back. And also greetings to our friends at Radio Free Ohio, our newest affiliate in Akron, Ohio. We are speaking with Luis Navarro, who is the former political director for the John Kerry presidential campaign. And Luis, you're part of the Coronado Project, and you were the co-author of a memo that was discussed in a cover story in Newsweek about how the Democratic Party can reach out to communities of color, to Hispanics, reach out beyond, let you characterize it rather than
sure.
me. Tell us about this memo.
Yes, this memo came out of a discussion among Latino political operatives and electoral principals post-2004.
Mm-hmm.
And the point was is that John Kerry had lost a 9% of overall Hispanic votes from 2000. Al Gore did 9% better than John Kerry did in 2000. Al Gore did 3% better among African Americans than John Kerry did in 2004. And so the question was, how is it that the Democrats seem to be losing two communities that, at least up to this point, have been seen as reliable supporters of the Democratic Party and its progressive agenda?
May I interject a quick
sure.
question? George W. Bush, in the last year, just mm-hmm. in 2004, gave $1 billion to churches, much of it, if not most of it, to black churches,
mm-hmm.
where his vote doubled.
Mm-hmm.
And about 4 years ago, there was a huge push, a lot of Republican money going into Hispanic radio. And now you've got Hispanic Rush Limbaughs all over the country that you didn't have 6 years ago,
right.
8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And is that a variable in this?
I think it's a contributing factor, but I think more important, there are a number of systemic issues within the party itself that lead to this underrepresentation and sort of distorted view as it relates to communities of color.
Yeah.
And the first is an issue of a culture of transaction. What has typically been the relationship of the party to minority communities is to identify a universe of unaccountable self-proclaimed leaders to move some arbitrary sum of money not attached to any specific electoral outcome or
right.
measurable gain.
Yeah. You got 20 seconds here.
And then using that as the means to go after voters of color without messaging to them the way you would any other universe of voters.
So the solution is to narrowcast to them as well.
Well, to narrowcast to them as well, but you can't do that until you create your a greater base of voter behavior knowledge, which currently doesn't exist within the party.
So that's the work that needs to be done. Luis Navarro, thanks so much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Thanks for being with us today. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. See you then.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.